The Fan on Demand. From the skills of killer Canadian Milos Raonic to the spacesuit outfits of Serena Williams, this is Total Tennis Coverage. This is Aces on Sportsnet Radio The Fan 590. Here are your hosts Roger Lajoie and Tom Tebbit of Tennis Canada.
And folks, good Thursday night, and welcome once again to Aces. I am Roger Lajoie. Tom Tebbit is in New York at the U.S. Open, and we are with you for the next hour to talk about the wonderful game of tennis. U.S. Open in particular this week. We'll be back again in 2 weeks' time as well. Coming up later in the show, Michael Downey, president of Tennis Canada, will be in conversation with our own Tom Tebbit. We'll open up the email bag. So many people like to talk to Tom, send questions. You can send questions throughout the course of the night at either roger@fan59.com, that's email box, roger@fan59.com. Or if you're on Twitter, follow me at TheRog590. Send your comment, your tweet for Tom. He'll answer your questions in our final segment, and he will join us momentarily. This first segment of Aces is brought to you by Tennis Canada. To get up-to-the-minute tennis news and scores, visit lovemeansnothing.ca. Tennis is spoken here. Tennis being spoken this week in New York for sure. Joining us from Flushing Meadows is Mr. Tom Tebbit. Tom, how are you?
Not bad, Rog. How are you?
Excellent, sir. And a great week of tennis so far. I think it's been an interesting week. But maybe let's talk about, before we get into some of the matches and what's transpired, is the latest news on Venus Williams. First glance, sounds really, really bad. Venus rather adamant, though, today in numerous reports that, look, I'm going to play tennis again. I'm going to be okay. Shows you, Tom, scary things can happen to people. And I know Venus has battled injuries, but this one was certainly unique, to say the least.
Well, it is, but when you think about it, about 6 months ago, her sister Serena had blood clots, and then she had a hematoma after that. And so I think what she's been through is, and I think she had to go on blood thinners, obviously, when you have blood clots. So she had a lot more maybe to come back from than Venus will. So at this point, it runs in the family a little bit, but I think the most significant thing here is that I think Venus was getting close to the end, when this happened. The last year or so hasn't been that promising for her, but Serena's made a phenomenal comeback after what she went through, and even though she lost in the fourth round at Wimbledon, she's won two tournaments this summer. She's playing great. I mean, she's clearly the best player in the world right now. That doesn't mean she'll win the U.S. Open, but at the moment, she's just playing the best tennis there is on the women's tour.
And that's the case for sure. Serena has been the big story, steamrolling her way into round three, needing 49 minutes. Boy, I'll tell you what, Tom, never mind the ratings. She has been the focal point and continues to be here in New York. And you know what? We've seen it before with her. When she is healthy, she loves the limelight. She loves the major tournaments. She's going to be tough to stop, boy.
Well, she's just a terrific player. I mean, I've been watching her, and I remember in Toronto just a few weeks ago. You look at her strokes. I mean, she's got a fantastic forehand. She's got a fantastic backhand. She's maybe the best women's serve ever, even though she's, you know, maybe 4 or 5 inches shorter than Venus. It's just such a fantastic controlled motion, and she can just repeat it time after time. And her movement is great for a woman who's, you know, fairly big. And the other thing is, I don't think anybody's been as good a fighter or as good a competitor. So you put all those things together, and she's very hard to beat. But I think the only thing that could get her maybe here is a little bit of nerves. You know, she's closing in on 30 next month, or actually later this month. And you just start sort of wanting a little bit more. You can put it in context more when you're older, and maybe you sort of tighten up a little bit. So I think anybody who's going to beat her is going to have to get a little bit of cooperation from her.
Tom Tebbit is with us from New York. I'm Roger Lajoie. It's Aces on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590, our regular tennis show. Throughout the course of the tennis season, we've had a lot of opportunity to talk with you and take your emails. We're going to do that in our final segment of the program today. Roger@fan590.com. If you're on Twitter, you can follow me at TheRog590. Send a tweet. Tom will be very happy to answer any of your questions in our final segment of the program. Michael Downey from Tennis Canada in conversation with Tom is coming up in our next segment as well. Roger Federer looking pretty good. Then I understand giving the crowd some serve tips after his win. 77-minute route. You know, we've talked about him so much, Tom. One of the things about the U.S. Open, the way it's playing itself out this time for Roger, a lot of injuries on his side of the draw. Hey, I tell you what, there may be one last hurrah for Federer here. I don't want to say last hurrah, but a hurrah late in his career a la Pete Sampras, maybe.
Well, I think all along, he's obviously number three in the world, and probably effectively, obviously, he's number three behind Djokovic and Nadal. But if you look at his Grand Slams this year, I think he's forget about the other tournaments. He won a tournament right before the Australian Open, hasn't won one since. But in the Australian Open, he lost to Djokovic in the semifinals, and Djokovic was basically playing out of his mind. And then he beat Djokovic at the French and lost to Nadal in the final. And you don't beat Nadal on clay in Paris. I mean, nobody's really done it except for Söderling a couple of years ago when Nadal wasn't quite right. And then he loses to Tsonga in the quarterfinals at Wimbledon. And again, a little bit not quite the sort of same thing as Djokovic, but he played unbelievably well after losing the first two sets. So really, it's taken a heck of an effort to put him out of a Grand Slam. So I don't see how you can sell him short. And I was up there watching some of that match today, and he played great. And I talked to Dudi Sela afterwards, the guy he beat, and he basically said there was nothing he could do. And so when Federer is like that, he's just flying. And, I think he can beat anybody. It's not like this is clay where Nadal has sort of got the hex on him. I think he could beat Djokovic on this surface. He could beat Nadal on this surface. And also the dynamic is good. People just aren't really expecting it, so there's not as much pressure on him.
And that's one of the few times that's been the case in his career. So that's a great point. Even at the U.S. Open, where usually all the pressure is on a player like Federer, there are other fish in the pond for sure. One of them is Andy Murray, the chronic, underachiever, or at least in some people's minds, an underachiever, Tom. I don't know if that's the case more than anything else. He certainly has played some of his prime tennis years in a time where we've had three of the greatest tennis players, maybe I don't say about that about Djokovic just yet, but I mean three really great men players. He is a solid ranked number four. Straight sets win for him in round one. Where's his game at?
Oh, I think he's playing well. He won the tournament in Cincinnati. What he's done this year, which maybe didn't help out too much for Montreal, but he won the Canadian tournament of the Rogers Cup the last 2 years. And this year he sort of thought, well, maybe I shouldn't start out quite so strong because, I end up maybe fading a bit towards the end of the U.S. Open. So he lost in the first match in Montreal. Then he won in Cincinnati, of course, aided by the fact that Djokovic retired in the final. And he's looked good. He looked good in his first match here. There were some tough moments and basically came through it fine. And he's going to play tomorrow night against Robin Haase of Netherlands, who's a dangerous player. He can give good players a hard time. So that'll be one to watch. But he's looking good. I think he has to feel, with Djokovic, we think his shoulder's okay. Nadal, we sort of think his fingers that he burned are okay and that the Swiss recovered from Wimbledon. So, this could be the one. And he is just in a bad situation in the sense that he's sort of been in this generation with Federer and Nadal who were untouchable, and now on top of that you got another guy who's almost untouchable. So it's tough for him, but basically I think he's got to go with the law of averages, keep plugging away over the next 2 or 3 years, and at some point you think he might get through and win a Grand Slam.
Well, that's his hope for sure, and we'll see what he can do at this tournament. The U.S. contingent is always worth talking about, and let's talk about it. I mean, there is some talk, Andy Roddick getting by after losing a set in his first round match. But, Tom, U.S. men's tennis, like any sport, and we see it here in Canada, but you very often need a great U.S. male performer to really take it to the next level back in the day of McEnroe and Connors. What do you think of Jack Sock? I was reading a story about him today saying that he might be the next Andy Roddick. Is that too much pressure? And I think they meet in the next round, do they not?
Yes, they do. I don't really know very much about him. I hate to say that, so I really can't tell you. But it's hard with these young players coming up. There's always the top American. I remember when Gemmelstab came along, when Spadia came along, and it was somewhere, I think, after McEnroe and maybe before Sampras. And so if you're the best American, they think automatically you're going to be as good as those two guys. And it just doesn't happen. So we'll have to see how it works out. I mean, the player that a lot of people talked about isn't American, but Dimitrov is a very talented Bulgarian player. He's 6 months younger than Milos Raonic. He sort of plays a lot like Federer, and people have been waiting for him to break through. Now, he may still break through, or he may not. And so it's really hard to tell with the younger players coming up. I think Sock has won the American Junior Championship, has a lot of good pedigree. But and he has practiced, I think, with Roddick. So he'll know a little bit about his game. On the other hand, he'll also defer maybe to Roddick as well. So it'll be interesting to see. Roddick's not coming in as he'd really like because he's been hurt this summer, hasn't played that much. So he's a bit vulnerable. So we'll see. But again, I guess it's just there's no can't-miss guys coming up in the juniors. Very few. I mean, Federer looked like that, and he stumbled for a while. So if he would stumble, then they're all going to stumble at some point.
Yeah. We've talked about Monfi a lot on the show, Tom, and a couple of emailers have talked about him. And I noticed seventh-seeded losing today again. What about him?
Well, he's always very unpredictable. I mean, he's I was wandering around today, and I saw a replay of him diving for a ball on the hard court. And he's just totally sort of a fearless daredevil rambunctious kind of guy, and he's really entertaining to watch. But I think a key match, I saw him play, I think Djokovic, I believe it was the quarterfinals in Cincinnati. Djokovic wasn't feeling that well. He was really beatable that night, and Monfils won the first set, and he just couldn't pull it off in the second, and by the third, Djokovic was playing pretty well. So there's just something missing there. And Juan Carlos Ferrero, former number one, a former finalist here, solid player. You got to sort of be happy for him because he's over 30 now, and he's had some serious injuries, but he's battled back this year, and basically what he wants to do is go out on his own terms, decide he's going to quit when he wants to quit, not because of injury. So there's a bit of a bright side to that result for the Spanish player because you know, he's been around a long time and probably deserves to go out with some honor.
Yeah, good for him. Ferrero was down by two sets to one, but came back 6-4, 6-4 in the last two sets. To win that and get the upset today. Tom, what about the Canadian contingent? What's the update? What's your thoughts on the way the Canadian players performed?
Well, a little disappointing. I think Alexandra Wozniak losing to Christina McHale. McHale's, she won her second round. She's going to play tomorrow against Kirilenko. She's a good young player. I mean, that was almost a 50-50 match. I thought Alex started a little bit slowly. Obviously, McHale started better, lost the first set. And then from then on, Alex won the second and the third set. She was up early, but I thought losing that first set kind of put her behind. So I think it was a good performance by her. She's coming back from a forearm injury, so I think she's doing very well. Rebecca Marino, a bit disappointing in losing her match. Dulko is an experienced player, but at this point, you might have thought Marino would be a little bit better, so that's a disappointing result. And on the men's side, you know, Frank Dancevic, you know, had the injury, the hamstring, had to pull out in the third set of his match, so that's obviously another disappointment. But Vasek Pospisil winning his first round is great, and he's going to play tomorrow against Feliciano Lopez, and Vasek is really on a an upward climb now, having won a round at the Rogers Cup and then playing Federer fairly tough, and getting to winning his first match in a Grand Slam. So good for Pospisil, and I think it's a tall order against Lopez tomorrow. But the way he's improving, you can never tell with a young guy like that when they're getting better by the day.
All right, nice to see. We got about 2 minutes quickly to talk about the women's side. Caroline Wozniacki going on the court as we speak. Maria Sharapova with a dominating win today. What about a quick recap of the women's side?
Well, I think Sharapova really had a hard time in the first match against Heather Watson. So sometimes that happens, and then after that, you're sort of, you've been through the worst, and your nerves are sort of set in, and you know how to control them, and you play better. So she won her match very easy today against Yakimova, and she'll play Flavia Panetta next. And Panetta has not been playing well this year, so I definitely think she can get through that one. I'm looking at the draw here, I think she could get through the next one. So she could go a long way, even though I think she could easily make the semifinals, and then she might have to play Zvonareva or somebody like that, Stoser, coming from the bottom of that part of the draw. So I think it looks good for Sharapova, and like I said, getting through that first one is good for her. She's obviously probably the second favorite behind Serena Williams, and Serena got through today very easy against Mikaela Krajicek, 6-1, 6-1, looked great. She's just steaming right along, and it's going to be interesting to see if she does play Azarenka, the number 4 seed in the next round. That could be the toughest match she might have before the final.
That's Tom Tebbit. He's live at Flushing Meadows in New York for the U.S. Open. I'm Roger Lajoie here in our Toronto studios. You're listening to Aces, Canada's only regularly scheduled tennis radio show. And after the break, we are going to be joined by Michael Downey, president of Tennis Canada, to recap the Tennis Canada season and the Rogers Cup. Of course, with Tom, conversation recorded earlier. We will also have your questions and comments directed at Tom himself. We love to hear from you. Roger@fan59.com is email. Roger@fan59.com. If you're on Twitter, follow me at TheRog590. Send us a tweet. Any question, comment you have for Tom Tebbit, who's live in New York at the U.S. Open, welcome. Back in a moment. Roger Lajoie, Tom Tebbit. You're listening to Aces on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 59.
Without tennis, we might not have the tennis dress. Another reason to celebrate the game. This is Aces with Roger Lajoie and Tom Tebbit of Tennis Canada. Sportsnet Radio. The Fan 590. So why don't you
smile? Roger Lajoie here in Toronto. Tom Tebbit is at the U.S. Open at Flushing Meadow in New York. And this is Aces on Sportsnet Radio. The Fan 590. This segment of Aces is brought to you by Corona Extra. Pick up your 6-packs of new Corona Extra limited edition bottles at the LCBO and the beer store, and visit findyourbeach.ca to vote for your favorite bottle. Well, Michael Downey has had a great year with Tennis Canada. I think it was a great year. I think Milos Raonic, despite the injuries, his emergence as a primetime player has done wonderful things for the sport. Several other young Canadian players are performing well. Rogers Cup in both Montreal and Toronto. Certainly a success. Tom Tebbett had a chance to sit down and review the year that was and the years that may be ahead with the president of Tennis Canada, Michael Downey.
Michael Downey, thanks for being on the show tonight.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate the opportunity.
It's busy. I'm sure it's been a busy summer of tennis for you. I wonder how you're feeling after all of this.
Very good, actually. As you know, we just finished our two Rogers Cups in the new virtual combined same week formula and or format, and we felt that went extremely well. And we're seeing some good progress on the both the junior front and the professional front with Canadian players. So it's shaping up to be a good summer overall.
You've been in New York for a few days now. How do you think that the people at the U.S. Open have handled the threat of Hurricane Irene?
I think quite well, actually. I think they lucked out because from what I've seen this week, there was really no damage. But I know that they, over the weekend, actually had to dismantle an awful lot of the site, like all the TV-related monitors and boards all had to come down because they were at risk of being damaged. And when I was on site on Monday, everything was back to normal. I think the only thing that I saw that was when I tried to buy a beer at one of the concessions, they actually said the beer shipment hadn't arrived yet. So that's probably inexcusable under normal circumstances, but given what they faced on the weekend, totally understandable.
Yeah, well, I'm sure the beer problem could be even more than the hurricane for some people, but I'm glad. I'm sure it's getting taken care of now. What kind of business does the president of Tennis Canada do in New York when you're there for meetings the first couple of days of the U.S. Open?
It's very busy, actually. I arrived basically a week ago, Thursday night, and I'm lucky enough that I sit on two very important committees, the Tournament Council for both the WTA and the Tournament Council for the ATP, and we kind of represent the 30-odd tournaments on both sides of the ledger. So we've sat in those meetings discussing many issues that both the tours face. And then I also sit on the board of TPL, which is Tennis Properties Limited. That is the aggregate of all of the ATP Masters Series events that we aggregate our TV rights globally. So that was another meeting that that I was part of. So it's very, very busy, and it's also a time to get out and meet people and networking and contacts because the worldwide tennis community does come in for these meetings. So it was a very busy weekend, despite the hurricane risk, which did impact some of the meetings on Sunday, especially.
Can you let us in on any of the topics that would have been discussed in some of these meetings?
Well, yeah, the ATP front, we were going through the agreement that's been set with the players with respect to prize money increases. So we're going to see a 9% lift annually for the next 3 years on our ATP event. And we thought that was a fair agreement given the strength of the ATP Masters events at this point in time because the product is so very strong. So that was obviously one of the issues on the ATP side that we discussed. On the WTA side, I was part of a meeting this week when we were looking at bids for a new global broadcast agreement. And I can't get into the particulars of that, but it was all the bids were very favorable. And it's good news for the WTA Global TV broadcast. There'll be more money coming into the tournaments, but there'll also be more exposure for the product globally. And those are equal objectives moving forward.
Now that both the Rogers Cup events in Montreal and Toronto are over, played as a virtually combined event for the first time, how would you say on the whole that worked out?
I think we did quite well. We didn't expect to necessarily hit a home run in our first year because I think with these type of changes, which are quite significant, you've actually got to go through the experience and learn. But I think generally we were quite positive on the situation. And, you know, a couple examples. I think one, because unfortunately we had rain in early in the week in both Toronto and Montreal, and really at different times, which shouldn't surprise people because weather tends to move across the country, we were able to benefit from a live broadcast. So when it was raining in Toronto, we got live tennis from Montreal across the country. And then I think it was either Tuesday or Wednesday night, the reverse happened where Montreal was down and the rest of the country got to see live tennis in Toronto. So those were some of the fringe benefits that, quite frankly, we wouldn't have had in our old model. And I also think on-site, the general feeling, at least from what we saw and heard, was people took in the other matches when they were walking around. And that's largely because our research tells us that the average fan is on-site over 6 hours. So while they're primarily watching the main match, they do actually spend a lot of time on site. So having the availability of being able to watch the Montreal tournament in Toronto or vice versa in Montreal helped. But really, Tom, you know, we're going to look at some research results. We went in the field, as we always do, during the Rogers Cup in Montreal and Toronto, and then there's a pretty extensive phone-back survey, I think, among 500 people in both cities that visited our tournaments. And we're going to get those results in mid-September, and that's when it's going to be most telling, because we have a lot of questions around our new format. And while we may have certain observations, it's more important to hear actually from our customer.
There's really been nothing quite like the rise of Milos Raonic this year. The first 6 months were just fantastic. And of course, everybody, including you, very disappointed by the injury at Wimbledon. How tough a blow was that for you personally and for Tennis Canada?
To a certain degree, I think not as much Tennis Canada, but more tennis in Canada. It took the wind out of the sail to a certain degree, because we all had such, Canadian tennis fans had such great hopes and aspirations for the young kid, especially at Wimbledon. Then the back half, because he basically had no points to defend, or very few points to defend. But on the other hand, he's only 20 years of age. He's a very committed young man, and I know for a fact, because I actually had him sit in my office during the Rogers Cup, and we chatted for over an hour. He has taken this injury very seriously. His rehab, he's putting the time and commitment that's needed into it. You know, he had his coach was flying in from Spain. He had his fitness guy flying in. He had been working in the last 2 weeks with his physio guy. So he is treating it very seriously, and he won't come back, as we know, until he's ready, and that's most likely Davis Cup. But I think we're going to find he's going to come back even better, and that's what he believes. He just wants to make sure he comes back at the right time and he's given his body enough time to heal. And so I really think this is just a detour in a career that's going to go very high. And he's only 20. The average age of a top 50 player, I think, is 26. So his best years are ahead of him, and hopefully he can get past this injury.
You've been at the U.S. Open. What's impressed you about the U.S. Open, the way it's run, the sheer magnitude of the event? What really hits you?
I enjoy taking the subway to the U.S. Open. I just love the convenience of getting off the subway and walking directly on site. And I think that makes it very accessible to the general public. And that may be something people take for granted, but I think it's very special that access is there. I think the other thing is just the sheer size of it. It's when earlier in the week when I was on site, it's so special to see so many courts going, so many people on site, and loving tennis. And I especially enjoyed the new court. I watched Alex unfortunately lose, but she put up a good battle on Monday night on their court 17, and it's a lovely court with 2,500 seats, kind of an octagon model in the corner of the site. And, you know, it may just be their 17th court that they've added, but it was a significant move, and it was throughout the papers in the last couple of days saying this was a nice innovation. So I think, like what we try to do in Toronto and Montreal, Jim Curley and his team, they are always trying to innovate. And they're wrestling with the fact that, you know, they can't solve this rain issue on their main stadium. And so until they can sort that out relative to other Grand Slams, they're looking to invest in other areas to enhance the experience for both the players and the fans.
What's been your personal highlight of the tennis summer, Michael?
You know what? Actually, Alex Wozniak. I think, you know, when you think of how far her ranking fell, Tom, and you probably know it better than I, but, she was well into the 200s coming off injury. To see her return in the way that she has, like she smoked Peer in Toronto. You know, it was like 6-love, 6-1 or 6-1, 6-2. And Peer is a, perennial top 20 player. Now, she lost to Stosur, but she put up a good battle. And then to come into the U.S. Open and win three qualifying matches, and because of the hurricane, she had to win two qualifying matches on Friday on the same day. And then even though she lost Monday night, she put up a great battle against a very promising young American who's about 50-55 in the world. I really believe Alex is back. And, you know, I haven't calculated the rankings, but I got to believe she's close to 100 now. And she's going to go into the Quebec City Challenge in a couple weeks and I think do really well. And I wouldn't be surprised that she's back down into the top 100 before the end of the year, and then it's gloves off because she's got some weapons. Like, she really played well Monday night. She can strike that ball, and I think she's just got to keep developing coming back from injury. But to see her back in the top 50, top 40, wherever she's going to end up, is good for Canadian tennis, and it's especially good given how far her ranking fell. But she's fought her way back, and I think that says a lot about her character.
Michael, you've been at Tennis Canada for about 7 years now, been around tennis a lot over that time, seen the international game. If you had a magic wand and could change anything in the international game or the worldwide tennis scene, what would it be?
Well, that's a tough question. You know, I think, you know, and it's been debated at length, I think we just need to see more consistency in the women's game. And there's a lot of good things going on in that game, but we need the consistency. We need their number one player to win the slams, and we need more consistency on who those top 10 players are. And that's going to work its way out over time. Like, at the end of the day, it's the competition within that group. But I think there is that disparity right now between the strength of the men's game and the women's game from a popularity. And that's just the way it is. And it's I was told before I joined Tennis Canada the women were more popular in the early 2000s. So I'm looking forward to the strength of the women's game picking up so we've got more parity between men's and women's. And I think that's going to help our virtual combined same week model as well. And it just helps generally the sport.
And Michael, anybody who's been to your office at Tennis Canada knows that you have a parakeet there named Anna. And they also
that's right.
They also know that Anna is named after a certain player with the last name of Ivanovic. So I was wondering, since Anna Ivanovic was here this year, did she get a chance to hook up with the other Anna?
She actually didn't, you know, and I think this was one of the weaknesses of our new model, because I had to go back and forth between Toronto and Montreal. Not that I didn't want to be in Montreal, because it's a great event and a great city. But I did go into the week saying, you know, it'd be great if someone could bring her in, because I did name Anna after that great player from Serbia. And the truth of the matter is the bird was given to me on my 50th birthday by my family, and Anna had just won our Rogers Cup. And I said to my son, let's name it after our current Rogers Cup champion. So anyway, the bird's doing well. She's been there 4 years and loves being in the office. She's a bit of a trademark of the Toronto office, and has become quite a tennis fan as well.
Well, maybe there can be a rendezvous for Anna, both Annas, in 2 years.
Exactly.
Michael, thanks a lot for being on Aces tonight.
Thanks for the opportunity, Tom.
And thanks very much again to a fine guy, no question about it. Michael Downey in conversation with our own Tom Tebbit, who is live at the U.S. Open, Flushing Meadows in New York. I'm Roger Lajoie. Lots of emails for Tom at roger@fan59.com. We always do. roger@fan59.com. Tom will answer your tennis questions in just a few moments, and we'll wrap up another edition, and we'll tell you what's coming up in 2 weeks, and we'll join you again on Thursday night here on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other. The Fan Club. Join online at fan590.com. Grass, clay, or hard court, wherever the game is played, we'll be there. This is your tennis show, Aces, with Roger Lajoie and Tom Tebbit of Tennis Canada. Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Right, right, you're bloody well right. You got a bloody right to say.
Thanks once again to Michael Downey, president of Tennis Canada, for joining Tom in our previous segment. I'm Roger Lajoie. Tom Tebbit is live in New York at the U.S. Open at Flushing Meadows. This segment of Aces is brought to you by National Bank Financial Group. Need a smarter mortgage? All-in-one banking from National Bank gives you highly competitive mortgage rates, plus a line of credit. For details, visit nbc.ca/all-in-one. That's nbc.ca/all-in-one. Tom and I have had a great time talking to so many listeners, and in the weeks we've done the show, it's hard to believe how fast our series of shows has gone by. We have another one coming up in 2 weeks on Thursday, September the 15th, 7 to 8 p.m., the same station and same time, Thursday, September 15th. At that time, Tom and I will take more of your calls and emails. But, Tom, we have a ton of emails and questions for you. So you're ready to get into the mailbag, sir?
Yes, sir, Raj.
Let's go. Aaron starts it off tonight, and like many people, regular listeners of our show, Eric, thank you so much, wants to know, will the WTA ever do anything about the shrieking grunting we see on the tour? To be honest, it's never bothered me much as I watch the matches on TV, but I was in Ash Stadium to watch Sharapova's first-round match earlier this week, and the shrieking did bother me. Not sure if it's unique to that particular stadium, but makes that, and has really enjoyed the radio program. And, Aaron, we appreciate that. Tom, is it an issue? Is it a problem, the yelling, the screeching, the grunting that you see at, well, men and women, but the women in particular in this case?
Well, Roger, it'll be interesting tonight. There's a guy named Carlos Berloque who's playing the next match in Arthur Ashe against Novak Djokovic. And I saw him playing. He's an Argentine. I saw him playing earlier this year. And first off, he seemed to fake an injury. He had this miraculous. He looked like he was dead. Next thing you know, he came back out after an injury timeout. But he also, he sort of shouts. He doesn't shriek or whatever, grunt. So we'll see how controlled he is tonight, but I give people an alert for that if they're watching the match. As far as I don't like it. I think a lot of people don't like it. It puts you off. It's not pleasant. But I think the horse is out of the barn. I mean, Jimmy Connors used to grunt way back when. Monica Seles obviously grunted a lot. A lot of players. I mean, Serena goes ballistic. Sharapova goes ballistic. I just don't think it's fair to your opponent. But too often you hear the opponent say, oh, I didn't even notice. And Heather Watson said that the other day when he played against Sharapova. So I think the only way anything could happen really is Wimbledon, because Wimbledon has so much weight. If they just said you can't do it, I think people would be scared. But aside from that, I don't see any way to change it.
Aaron, thanks again for the email. Mac in Montreal is another regular listener and says, in your opinion, which is the most difficult major to win? I've always thought the French, both mentally and physically challenging because the rallies are longer. On the other hand, in Australia, you have to battle the heat, which can be a huge factor, and sometimes the service in Australia seems to be the most fair service of all the slams, so maybe more players have a chance to win. What do you think? Tom, what do you think?
Well, geez, Roger, it's a good question. It's catching me a bit by surprise. I know when I first started in tennis, everybody said the French Open because it's clay and all the matches last longer and all that stuff. But the more I think about it, I think Wimbledon might be the toughest, just because I think Wimbledon takes the most skill. Because you get more reward for your shots on the grass. The balls sort of die and skid through fast. So if you hit aggressive shots, and not many players can do that. Most players are fundamentally defensive players, like to stay at the back. And even though they stay at the back now on grass, I still think there's a reward for serving well. There's still a reward for going in and volleying. And there's still a reward for a greater variety of shots. So it's not hard in terms of physically, but in terms of being a skilled player, I think the very top skilled players, the best players in terms of skill, win Wimbledon. So in a way, I'd say that's the toughest to win because not many players are that gifted.
Yeah, it's a good way of looking at it. Graham says, given some of the recent controversies we've had with foot faults, Roddick at the 2010 U.S. Open, Serena at the 2009 U.S. Open, do you think, Tom, the challenge system will ever be expanded to cover foot faults as well?
That's a good question again, too. I don't know. Can we over sort of Hawkeye a court? Can we penalize a guy for not tying his shoelaces properly if we catch it in a close-up? So you sort of wonder. I suppose you could do it. It would make sense, and maybe, but just at a certain point, just like we talked about, I think, in some other shows, should we have a time clock on the court? And I think in some ways, certainly in the time clock, you should have a little flexibility because players play at a certain pace. They have a long rally. They're exhausted. They don't want to start right away. So you could have it, but I don't really think it's necessary.
Charlotte emails in, and the email address is roger@fan59.com. We've got an incredible response tonight, which is great. Thank you for that, roger@fan59.com. Charlotte, another regular listener. Thank you for your comments, Charlotte. Charlotte wants to know, Tom, is the sport of tennis becoming an older sport? Seems like we're seeing more players in their late 20s have some success on both the men's and women's side. And are you in favor of WTA age restrictions? If you can have young women in their teens have careers in music and as actresses, why shouldn't they be able to play tennis as much as they want at that age?
Well, I mean, I think they brought in the age restriction rule 10 years ago, and, you know, we had prodigies like Jennifer Capriati breaking through, playing her first term before she was 14, just a month or two before she turned 14, I think. So I think the age restriction rule has worked well. I think, it could be a danger if they started too young. And since most of the women players aren't really breaking through now until they're into their 20s, why would you worry about that? And definitely, I think both sports are getting older. I think maybe it's just the physicality of it. You've got to be stronger, both mentally and, you know, there's obviously the physical side, but there's a mental side as well. So it surprised me a little bit because you got so used to Boris Becker winning at 17. You got so used to Steffi Graf and those kind of players winning, you know, when they're just 16, 17 kind of thing. And you thought that would go on forever, but it's been a definite change. And you got to be older and you got to be more mature and you got to be stronger if you're going to be the top players today.
Tom Tebbit is in New York. I'm Roger Lajoie. This is Aces on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. Great to have you with us. We'll be back in 2 weeks on Thursday, September 15th, between 7 and 8 o'clock. It's our final show of the Aces season for the tennis season. And Tom and I will take calls and emails and talk some tennis with you again in 2 weeks. And we appreciate all the emails we've had tonight at roger@fan590.com. Let's get to a few more here, Tom. I don't think I'm going to be able to get to them all. But Vinny says, do you guys think Sharapova's double fault issues are due to ball toss issues or a residual effect of the shoulder surgery she had a few years ago, or maybe a combination of the two? Vinny says, obviously Serena is a heavy favorite to win the tournament, but I thought Sharapova looked sharp in her match off the ground yesterday. What do you think?
Yeah, no, she did look good. I'll keep the answer short so we can get as many as we can. I think it's a residual of the surgery. There's just some confidence that's not there. And Rod, just a quick thing I want to mention as well. I think last week or 2 weeks ago, somebody asked about the underachievers in tennis, and right. I can't believe I forgot this guy, Thomas Berdych.
Oh yeah.
I mean, he beat Federer in 2004, and I always tell a story about him. I think about 2 years later, I got him in an interview room here in New York, and I said to him, "Have you ever entered a Grand Slam tournament and thought that you could win?" And there was a long pause, and he went, "That's a very interesting question." So he basically answered my question.
Yeah, by answering it that way. Yeah.
I mean, all that talent, and you don't even think about winning a Grand Slam tournament. But now he's about to turn 26 in a few weeks. I think it's game over. It's a real shame because that guy could strike a ball really like nobody else.
Yeah, says it all, doesn't it, that answer for sure. T-Bert emails in at roger@fan590.com and wants to know, how difficult is it to play guys like John Isner or Dr. Ivo Karvalik? These type of players seem to give their opponents no rhythm because these players have such great service games, but not such good break games. So their matches come down to who can capitalize on a few break chances. Not only that, and thank you, T-Bert. Tom, is that true of not just those players, but certain player styles make them difficult to play because, I don't know, they're awkward or different?
Well, those guys are really different, I think. And it's a very good point. And it's very hard to play them because it's a totally different dynamic. You just get so conscious of the fact that you can't break their serve. And then you start getting a little twitchy on your own serve. You think, boy, I can't lose serve because I can't break this guy. And the other advantage they have, if you really think about it, is they play matches like that all the time. Everybody they play, they bomb in the serve, they finish the points quickly, and they somehow try to break serve or go to a tie break and win in a tie break. Whereas the other guys, they don't play that type of guy, except when they play an Isner or when they play a Karlovic. So they have a distinct advantage. Obviously, they're usually not and definitely not as athletic. But it's a real challenge. I actually enjoy watching them sometimes because they're so different, and it changes the sort of the strategies and the tactics and the mental approach of the guys that play against them. So it makes it a refreshing change from the regular matches where both guys are blasting the ball from the backcourt.
Yeah, they're unique for sure. Not really a question, but I wanted to acknowledge Bob in Burlington, who's a regular listener of Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590, and gives us many great emails and insight. Him and his wife are big fans of tennis. They play together. They watch together. They're at the Rexall Center for the Rogers Cup. And Tom and Bob in Burlington always has something positive to say and a nice story. And Bob, thank you. I just want to acknowledge you, sir, because it's always nice to hear from you, whatever the topic is. I'm glad you and your wife are enjoying the show. Brian in Toronto has been a great listener as well. Brian, thank you so much. You have been very kind in your thoughts. He's got a question for you, Tom. In your opinion, what is the most difficult major to win? Now, we had this previous question again, but Brian comes back and says it the same way, French and Australian. Again, we've discussed this before, Tom. You said Wimbledon, but it's funny how the French keeps coming up.
Well, the French is just it's physically harder. The rallies last a lot longer. But actually, in recent years, it hasn't been that hot, and that sort of weather-wise hasn't been that much of a challenge for the players. Australia and the U.S. Open definitely are where you get the extremes more often, so that's more difficult. So, and the other thing is, I think that at the French, they speeded up conditions. The rallies don't last quite as long. Some of the more aggressive players have been able to do well. So I think that that sort of stereotype has changed a little bit. So I don't know. It's a really interesting subject to debate, and the interesting thing is that all four have something that you could put in their favor in making the argument that they're the hardest one to win.
We're going to squeak in a call, too, here. We got a few more emails to get to, and we have a few more minutes. But Mark in Toronto called in, wanted to talk to Tom. So, Mark, you're on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
This week used to be like, I'm in my late 30s now, but in my 20s and my teens, the U.S. Open was, I used to look forward to it, you know, months in advance, and it's a shame it's lost its luster for me. For many reasons, but I used to love the U.S. Open growing up. Anyway, the reason for my call is to maybe discuss the lack of American talent in tennis. And there's some other sports that are not producing any American players, baseball, for instance, and I think a lot of it's because the athletes in the big states are going to play football right away. And I'm wondering if there's any correlation to that or why you think the American talent isn't there. Is it just coincidence or the junior foundation's not as strong, or are the, as I said, the better athletes maybe, you know, going to pro football or going to other sports, and tennis isn't really on the map, you know, as it should be.
Interesting call, Mark, and thank you for that. Well, what about the American players, Tom? We touched on it slightly earlier, but there aren't many big-time American, especially men's side players, although I think the U.S. Open is great as it always is, but that's my opinion.
I agree with that, Roger. But, no, I think if you look at England, Britain, they get like $50 million a year from the Wimbledon profits, and they can't produce players. The Americans spend all kinds of money trying to develop players, opening training centers and getting good coaches and all that kind of stuff. And there just doesn't seem to be any pat method. The one method you sort of see generally is maybe some hardship. Maybe the American players are spoiled. Maybe Canadian players are a little bit the same thing, or countries where things are you know, economically a little more solid. But you look at the Serbs with Djokovic and Jankovic and Ivanovic. You look at other players coming from former Eastern European countries. You look at the Russians. Countries where people haven't had so easy, they seem to fight, you know, from a more difficult position to get onto the tour, and once they get there, they seem maybe to have just a little bit more. So there's no easy answer to it, but that's always the one that sort of sounded the most convincing to me.
Neeraj has an interesting one, and I don't know if anybody knows the answer to this one, but I got to admit, it sounds at first like it's a silly question, but I don't think it's a silly question, because he says the first question every kid asks when they're first introduced to the game is, what's the deal with the scoring system? 15, 30, 40, why not 40 and 45? During Wimbledon a couple of years ago, he says, ESPN went around to the players' restaurant and asked the players if they knew the answer, and even the players didn't know. Do you have any idea?
Well, I think it basically the thing over the years I've heard is it's the face of a clock, so it's 15:30, and something screwed up with 45 and became 40. So, and then, you know, love becomes some oeuf, which is the French word for egg, which is sort of the shape.
I've
of
heard
zero.
That before. I've
so
heard that
I,
before.
I think that's the explanation for 40 and why it isn't 15:30. I mean, you could have it 1, 2, 3, 4. I think sort of in a way it's fun to make it a little different to have it that way and not too confusing. So. Let's as they say in tennis, let's not change a winning game.
Keeps a tradition for sure. So many of you emailed. We appreciate it. Roger at fan590.com. We're out of time for your emails tonight, but the good news is Thursday, September 15th, we're back between 7 and 8 o'clock. Tom Tebbett will be back in studio then, and we'll take some phone calls and emails and wrap up our Aces show for another season. Tom, a treat. Enjoy New York. How can you not enjoy New York and enjoy the rest of the U.S. Open? We'll be talking again soon, my friend.
Okay, look forward to it, Roger.
Thank you. Tom Tebbett of lovemeansnothing.ca, our co-host here on Aces on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. Folks, thanks again for all those emails, man. We didn't get to them all. Great to hear from you. We'll do it again in a couple of weeks. Thanks to Michael Downey, the president of Tennis Canada, as well. Our technical director tonight is Derek Brandeo, and our producer is Matt Brown. I'm Roger Lajoie. I'll be back again Saturday morning between 10 and 12:30 here on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. Look forward to hosting Sports Central Saturday morning edition for you this Saturday between 10 and 12:30. The Soccer Show is coming up next on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. Nigel Reed in the host chair as usual. All the latest soccer news coming up. Ben Ennis has the Showdown Show is also tonight. And Ben Ennis has Sports Central coming up between 10 and 12. I'm the Raj. I'll talk to you again Saturday morning. Thanks again for your emails. We'll talk to you again tennis-wise in 2 weeks on Thursday, September the 15th. between 7 and 8 p.m. For Tom Tebbett, I'm Roger Lajoie. You've been listening to Aces on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.